Blog Talk Radio.
Here we are at 7 p.m. Yeah, Eastern Time on Thursday, of course, January 28th.
January 28th.
Yeah, January 28th, 2010. It's all about wine, and tonight's topic is Eastern Europe. Cool.
Central and Eastern Europe.
Central. Change that.
They call it Central and Eastern.
Central. Europe. Coming up in.
what?
Including the countries of.
yeah, but not, yeah.
Okay. We have 2 minutes. We'll be right back with the show with Ron from Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. We'll be right back. My name's Mike, and we'll see you back here in 2 minutes.
We have a variety of different sizes of bottles that are available.
The following takes place between 7 and 8.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and let them know, you know, trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio and 1000mics.com. It's All About Wine, featuring Ron, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert with Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
The labels themselves are, like I say, they become an art form.
We welcome your calls during this one-hour program. Go on air with us by dialing area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. Ask questions about any topic related to wine, or voice your comments about the program. Chat with us on 1000mics.com. Just click on All About Wine in the show listing and send your comment in the comment box. Always entertaining and informative, it's All About Wine. And now, please welcome Ron.
That's right.
Thank you. You need to work a little bit on the opening there.
Yeah, that's going to be changed.
Yeah, it's starting to have some issues.
Oh, it's still going, too. Okay, so people settle down. Yeah.
There we go.
Okay.
How's the bus crowd today?
They got stuck in traffic on I-4.
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah, well, sinkholes they've been having all that.
Yes.
It hasn't happened before. So.
Yeah, that's what they're using as an excuse, even though the sinkhole is
all fixed.
Patched up. Yeah, can we still use that one? Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, we can still use it.
So
most people in the country don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we have sinkholes here, but they've been patched up, but they're still calling about it. Welcome to the program, everybody, on 1000 Mics and Blog Talk Radio. Ron is in the house, as they say, and, he's wherever he's at. But ready to take your calls at any point during the show. Anything about wine, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. Get on our switchboard. We'll bring you on the air, and you can talk directly to Ron about wine this evening until 8 p.m. Eastern time. I know he's drinking a glass of wine. I'm drinking almost half a bottle. it's really going down smooth. I don't know what's going on here, but I finished the Plantation Blush earlier. What was it, last week or whenever? And now I'm back to the last part of the spice, and it's going down very well. So take it away, Ron.
If we start having problems with the broadcast here, then
yeah, there you go.
Now we know the reason. Welcome everyone, and thanks for joining us. Something I want to start with here. One of the trade journals we get, Prepared Foods, is the name of the trade journal, and it talks about the new foods coming out and preparation of foods and different things that are happening. A new product, I want to share this, a little paragraph, and I will read it to you word for word here. This is not an endorsement for this or an advertisement for this. It's just something I found extremely interesting. It says, don't wine, spelled with a W-I-N-E. Resveratrol, the ingredient found in grapes, has grown wildly in the past few years. A claim for its health benefits and possible potential to ward off the ravages of time The ingredient has a built-in demographic of 18 consumers ready and willing to embrace it. A substantial amount of research has validated a range of health benefits, mostly in animal studies, though human clinical studies are expected to appear in peer-reviewed medical journals soon. However, few products outside of wine have incorporated resveratrol, mostly in supplements and beverages. Now comes the first nutrition bar with the ingredient, Wine Time, developed by Resvez, that's spelled R-E-S-V-E-Z, promises to contain as much resveratrol as 50 glasses of wine. The 190-calorie bar promises a rich dark chocolate flavor, quote, harmonized with dates and almonds, end quote, and preferably high in fiber and extra super fruits. Ooh. Cranberry, noni, pomegranate, goji, berry, ikai, mangosteen, and blueberry. And that's the article. So I found that extremely interesting that we can get ourselves a nutrition bar now.
Yeah.
That will equal the health benefits of 50 glasses of wine.
50?
50, 5-0, 50 glasses of wine. The health benefits of 50 glasses of wine. And, yeah, that's my engineer just pointed out. Where's the fun in that? So, you know, it might be a nutrition bar, but, you know, it will leave you lacking at the end. So.
Yeah, definitely.
But I saw that, and I thought that was extremely interesting. I wanted to share that with everyone.
Very cool. Thank you.
Coming to your grocery shelves or health food store soon, I would guess I'd said. It's not an endorsement for it or anything. It's just something I found interesting. I am enjoying a bottle of wine from Georgia, not the state, but the country. The old Russian satellite country, Georgia, had a country on their own, and actually in the news because of being invaded by Russia a few years ago. But this is a wine from Georgia. It states, and I will read you the label here just for your information, basically. The state bottle, this says at the top, 2006 collection. And it says it's the D collection, which I have no idea what that means. Georgian semi-sweet white wine, established in 1971, Alanzanis Valley, A-L-A-Z-A-N-I-S, Alanzanis Valley. It's 11.5% alcohol, manufacturer JSC Corporation, Kingdom of Zaoli. It is a 750 bottle. Grown, produced, and bottled in Kakheti, Georgia. And on the back, it says, Alanzanis Valley, a white semi-sweet wine made from the Rakatsali grape, cultivated in the Kakheti region. The wine of straw color has a characteristic aroma, a fine, fresh, and a harmonious taste. Goes well with vegetables and roast meat. And that's all it says on it. Imported out of through Brooklyn, New York. But it does have the little thing on there that says contains sulfites and a little map showing the region of Georgia that it was growing in and all that. So interesting wine. It's a very rich golden color. It is a little lacking on the nose, I feel, but an interesting taste with hard to describe what it equates to. I don't know. It's a lighter style. A semi-sweet's a good description. It's not overpowering. As far as the sweetness goes, probably a little bit sweet Sauvignon Blanc. Moscato might be a little bit too sweet. It's rather clean tasting, though. It's not a heavy taste and all that. But an interesting wine. It's from Georgia. I had an opportunity to pick up a couple of three bottles from a little store down in Tampa that has these Georgian wines, and this was one of them. And so tonight, since we are talking about Central and Eastern Europe, I decided to chill it tonight and enjoy it with this program.
Okay.
Eastern and Central Europe. I was not real familiar. I have to admit, I wasn't real familiar with it. And for all of you who tune into the show just to laugh at my pronunciation of words on some of these different countries and different things, you are going to really enjoy tonight because some of these names here are unbelievable. So as always, I will apologize now in numerous times throughout the pronunciations of them for not saying them right. But some of these names really got me. But so the Central and Eastern Europe, a lot of this area, for years and years, a lot of this area was held under communist control. And being under communist control, it was a collective vineyards. It wasn't anything that individuals ran. It was collective vineyards. And so there wasn't a whole lot of pride, a whole lot of effort put into them. There was a lot of grapes grown, a lot of wine made just for people to drink. And that was the purpose of it, just so people could have wine. And when the Soviet Union and Soviet Empire broke up back in the 80s, I believe, if I'm correct, back in the 80s, all these countries were able to start out on their own, form themselves, get out from underneath communist rule. A lot of them became free countries. And they never really had much of a reputation for wine. They were growing, and they never really established anything as a wine country. Now they are starting to become more and more so. They've got a ways to go. The know-how is starting to come back. They didn't have that before. Again, it was just a collective, and they're just doing it as something to drink. Now they're starting to put a little bit more pride into it. The equipment was so old and out of date that it was amazing they were able to make anything. Some money has been starting to put into the Central and Eastern Europe countries, depending on the country. I can't say that as an overall view, simply because some of them are still at war. There's a lot of conflicts, a lot of corruption, to say the least, in some of the areas and all that. And so instead of putting a whole lot of money into the countries, some foreign investors are laying back and waiting, to see what's going to happen with the stability of the governments and everything. Some countries, though, are starting to get a little bit of reputation. Hungary has always been a wine-producing state. It's one of the classic ones with the Tokay grape and that type of a sweet wine, probably one of the sweetest wines in the world. It's been around for a long, long time. Slovenia is also getting a better reputation. They are starting to show that they have the capabilities and the know-how to become a much much better wine-producing region. And the Czech Republic, also Slovakia, is in declining as a wine producer, but they still have a lot of areas, and they're starting to see what they can do to improve it and all that. So a lot of these areas are falling away from the corporatives. People are starting to come in. And I'll break these down to individual ones and individual countries and all that. The Czech Republic, this is, and let me also to pinpoint where these are for those who might not understand the geographic areas of these countries I'm speaking of. Let me try to paint you a map, a verbal map of where these are. France and Germany. France is just south of the United Kingdom. We're familiar with that area. If you were to go north and east of France, you are in Germany. Belgium and the Netherlands are in the northwest corner of Germany. Below Germany, on the border of France, and actually surrounded by Germany, France, and Italy, is Switzerland. And just south of Switzerland and southeast of France is Italy. You go even further east from Germany and Italy, and you will find what we are calling the Central and European, or Central and Eastern European countries. And these are the Czech Republic, Slovakia, which the old Czechoslovakia country divided in half, Hungary, Slovenia, Bosnia, Herzegovina, Yugoslavia, Macedonia, Croatia. All these countries are right on the border there, Adriatic Sea being just to the south of them, and they all run right there, stretching over to the Black Sea, where Romania and Bulgaria touch the Black Sea, and then Greece is just south of them there. So that's trying to, you know, pinpoint you a little bit where these countries are and where this area is. And as I start telling you about each of these ones individually, I'll try to point out where they are. So the first one, the Czech Republic. The Czech Republic borders Germany on the west and Austria on the south, with Slovakia being to the east. During communist rule in the Czech Republic, wine was really not much of an issue, not much of a priority of thought or anything. The Wine Act came into effect in 1995, which was the privatization of most of the wineries, and given everyone a right to own wineries, own the vineyards, and own everything. It's taken time for people to start grasping this, for the wineries to start, people start stepping up and taking control of the wineries and all. There's a lot of outdated equipment in the Czech Republic. They have a large wine producing areas, though, even with the outdated equipment. Most of the grapes are made from local varieties. The main growing regions are in the southern Moravia and a much smaller Bohemian region, with the Bohemian region really doing quite a bit. And the Bohemian region is located north of Prague in the northern part of Czech Republic. The Moravia region down by the border of Slovakia, down in the south, eastern part of the country. These are the two main regions of the Czech Republic for grape growing. The production has been mainly around the two main grapes. Cabernet Sauvignon are international strains of the Cabernet Sauvignon. I shouldn't say Cabernet Sauvignon. It's being used, but they're using also other types. And then the white grapes, traditional white varieties, are Riesling, Pinot Gris, Pinot Blanc, Gewürztraminer, Sauvignon Blanc. They're also used in some of the ones from the German areas over there, Grüner Veltliner, Wolfsriesling, Müller-Thurgau, Neuburger Sauvignon. And there's also a Moravian Muscat, which is a sweeter style grape. And they're also using a lot of local crossings, a lot of crossbreeds that they're using. One, Aurealis, which is a cross between Riesling and Neuburger, and Palava, Gewürztraminer, and Thurgau cross. And then Chardonnay is being tried. But Chardonnay, I've noticed this too, and you probably have if you've listened to the programs, that Chardonnay is grown everywhere. It's just one of those grapes that I think that you can probably grow just about anywhere you want to throw it in the ground, and it's going to jump up and thrive. The red grapes that they're doing out of there are a lot of names that not really familiar, or a lot of local names and a lot of grape varieties that we just not familiar with. Cabernet Sauvignon being one. Pinot Noir is starting to show some potential, especially in the Bohemian region. But then there are growing grapes that are Francovaca, the Madre Portugal, a couple of others that I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce in this area. So these are ones. So if you see Czechoslovakian wines with no great name on it or something like that, be leery. It could be in Czech wines. I don't think of the whole country Czechoslovakia. And if you see Czech Republic wines, then it could be any of those. Slovakia, that is just east of the Czech Republic. It is a little bit about the same size as far as the land area goes, about the same size as the Czech Republic, actually a little bit smaller. It has a couple of three major wine growing regions. The big one in central Slovakia, which is in actually the central part of the state, south central part of the country. The lesser Carpathia is on the far western edge of it, and then there's a few smaller areas Nitra, which is outside the city of Nitra in the western edge, and eastern Slovakia growing area, which is by Kosice, which is way over in the far east. All of these actually in borders of Hungary, most all of them are right on the borders of Hungary. More recent plantings, again, a lot to do, a lot like the Czech Republic, simply because, again, it's one country during the communist rule, and growing of grapes wasn't something that was a priority, wasn't something that they really tried to take pride in. Similar grapes, similar language, similar economic conditions, and by and large, similar types of everything as the Czech Republic. What they call the Velvet Revolution of 1989, which was where they separated from the Czech Republic, Slovakia had 74,000 acres under vine, while today they've dropped that way down to only 24,000, 25,000. So it's really... But the ones that they have now are privately owned and are better taken care of and better quality. There are six growing regions in Slovakia. I just read you, actually most of them there, Slovakia, southern Slovakia, central Slovakia, Nitra, eastern Slovakia, Tokaj, and lesser Carpathia. New wine laws took effect in Slovakia back in 1996. They started to do the same thing as we've talked about before in Italy, France, Spain, Germany, where they have different tiers, different types of wines and different things. Slovakia has adopted those types of rules. They have table wine category, a quality varietal wine, a quality brand wine, quality blends, wines with special attributes, sparkling wines, aromatized wines, and Tokaj wines. So they are trying to categorize them, trying to get more standards, and trying to improve the quality coming out of Slovakia with the wines. Again, the great varieties coming out of there are about the same as you're going to find in the Czech Republic, although there are a few different ones since they are getting on the border of Hungary. You'll find a little bit different types of wine, a little bit different style. Hungary. This is, I was amazed at Hungary, the background and the history of Hungary. We're all quite familiar with, as wine drinkers, you're probably familiar with the Tokaj grape, which is a very sweet grape. It's one of the early wines coming around the world that's been known around the world, and it's a very sweet, aromatic wine that makes for just a wonderful wonderful dessert after dinner drink in itself. Hungary, only two European languages have words for wine that are not derived from Latin. And those languages are the Greek language and the Hungarian language. Hungarian records go back to ancient times when they had developed their own words for wine and their own meaning for grapes and cask and all that stuff. Not picked up on the Latin words, which I thought was quite interesting. The Romans used to bring grapes into Hungarian areas. And again, Italy is to the west, away from it. So Hungary was influenced much more so by some of the Roman grape brought in than I figured they would be. Although there are a lot of Italian French grapes used in Hungary. The Turkish occupation of the region, dessert wines, the Tokaj region, really increased the Tokaj grape, and the late harvest grapes are the noble rot, which is the botrytis that I've mentioned in earlier shows. And because of this, and because of the fact that Louis XIV of France loved the Tokaj, it tend to spread around the world. It tend to become very popular. And in 1730, it was the world's first vineyard classification based on the aspect and propensity of noble rot or the botrytis. So Hungarian growing area of Tokaj is just a classic old area that has been around for centuries and centuries. That area, and to give you a little bit of geographical insight to where that area. That area is in the far upper western, or I'm sorry, eastern edge of northeastern edge of the country, right next to Slovakia. Probably about as far away as you can get from just about anything else. It's situated all up there by itself. The Hungarian history, being because of its location and under communist rule, the quality suffered in the last century or so, and because of actually between 1980s and early 1990s, Hungary lost about 75% of workers, basically due to the communist collapse. The Russian communist collapse. Most of their wine was being exported to communist countries around Europe there, and when that collapsed, they lost the requirement of a lot of those areas to take their wines, and so it has because of that, about 25% of the grapevines have been cut down, plowed under, removed, just gives it no reason for doing it, but they have recently put in privatization laws. And the sale of vineyards and all that to outside industries is helping it survive. It's starting to bring it back a little bit. And the quality is starting to jump back up, and the area is starting to show a little bit more rebound than some of the other countries. And part of that is due to the fact that it does have a rich history, a rich background. The climate is very temperate for a European country. Almost due east of France, in the grape growing areas of France, and the climate there is influenced a lot by the Mediterranean Sea and the Adriatic Sea, which is south. You wouldn't think because it was so far inland it would be influenced so strongly, but it does. The summers are long, with short winters and a lot of moisture because of the moisture coming from the air being so warm and the ground a little bit cooler and vice versa in it, especially during harvest in the fall, there is a lot of moisture in the fall. Sunshine and mist really helps the formation of botrytis, or the noble rot, which is what's so critical for the Tokay grapes. Vineyard area is over 325,000 acres throughout the production. Annual production is close to 100 million gallons, which is quite a bit. They only export about 20% of that, though. It's again, it's something they're trying to get back in. White wines used to be very strong, but now they're starting to increase the production of red wines. A lot of Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc plantings, which seems to be working well for them. Rosé has declined, although rosé used to be a tremendously popular wine throughout Hungary, actually throughout Eastern Europe. I've found through all of this, my research on this, it's just rosé used to be a very popular wine there. Grape varieties recognized in Hungary, there are 35 different types of white wines and 15 different type of red wines. It's an amazing number of grapes that they grow in Hungary. And I'm not even going to try to pronounce them. There's, some of these are just unbelievable, the names that they have. Here is a white wine. I will spell you the name just to give you an idea of what I'm talking about. It is spelled C-S-E-R-S-Z-E-G-I. And then the second word of it is F-U-S-Z-E-R-E-S. Okay, so I'm not Hungarian. I'm not going to try to pronounce it, and if I do, I would destroy it. They do have a lot of the ones that we're used to, though. Riesling, Rhine Riesling, Italian Riesling, Sylvaner, Merlot, Thurgau, Gewürztraminer, Pinot Gris, Pinot Blanc, Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, Sémillon, Chasselas, Muscat, Chanel, Yellow Muscat, Grüner Muscateller. These are white wines, red wines, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Merlot, Pinot Noir. A lot of them that we know, there is a variety of them that they grow just there. These are just wines from Hungary, which grapes from Hungary, which is a tremendous amount of them. There are 23 appellations in Hungary. Newest one, Border Malek, just was granted in 2000. Laws there divide up the wines. Pretty strict laws, again, as you find a lot in Europe, France, Germany, Italy, Spain. Pretty strict laws. It divides the wines into the types and quality categories, composition, how it should be put together, production methods, yields, labeling, just all sorts of quality control, levels of quality here. 23 appellations in Hungary, and they fall into six main groups. The most popular and probably the most common is the Tokaj region. Actually, it's the spelled T-O-K-A-J, and it's always been Tokaj for me. I don't know if the J is pronounced in it or not. And then the second half, H-E-G-Y-A-L-J-A, Hagaya. This is, again, up in the upper eastern, northeastern corner of the country. It includes about 1,300 acres of grapes, and with about 83% of it owned by independent grape growers, which is really something because it used to be, again, communist country, and a lot of that used to be state ran. So this is it is quite something to see that independent growers own 83% of it. About 10% of it's owned by foreign producers, foreign companies that came in and taken over. And then Hungarian producers, a conglomerate owns about 5% of the countries there. The Tokaj is made from, and I will destroy these names, but I will try to pronounce them anyway. It's made from the Harsleva, that's H-A-R-S-L-E-V-E-L-U, Harsleva grape, the Ferment, F-U-R-M-I-N-T, the Sarga Muscatelli, S-A-R-G-A Muscatelli, and occasionally the Remus grape, O-R-E-E. The first two grapes are the base for the sweet Aszu, A-S-Z-U, on which the reputation of the Tokaj is the grapes that used for that. These are the ones where the Tokaj comes from. I thought it was just the grapes picked and all that, but they really do something quite different than just doing botrytis grapes and throw them in the tank. They actually do pick these things and do this method. This is excuse me again. Traditionally, it was made by picking botrytis grapes and then under their own weight, slowly provided small quantities of an alcoholic syrup that they call it Ezencia, E-S-Z-E-N-C-I-A, Ezencia. Then these grapes were mashed into a paste and added in hoodfuls or what they call the pochonias, 55 pounds to cask of the one-year-old base wine. And then they macerated that. So they made up this paste and added it in select amounts of 55 pound, pedonios, and let it mix in and then let it macerate. After racking this, the wine was then matured and cast for 3 years or longer,
wow.
Then stored in rock-hewn galleried cellars. So, and they still do that method. I mean, what they used to do, and they still do that now. This is how it's done. These cellars are over 600 years old now. And so the sweetness of the resulting Aszu wines was measured by the number of petonias added, or the number of this mashed paste that was added. And the Aszu Essenzia, being the higher the quality, the more of these 55-gallon or 55-pound mashed grape things that were added to the original thing. And this is how they made or how they make the Tokaj wine. More the modern methods are getting away from this time-consuming, labor-intensive and they're getting some good results. They're getting away from mashing up and doing all this, and they're starting to do a little bit more modern methods with it. And in doing so, they're getting some good results that are not not as costly. So, which is good, because I've had Tokay wines and they are absolutely positively delicious. Which, speaking of wine, I think I'm going to take this opportunity to break for a second here and have a sip of my Georgian wine. So, I'll be right back.
Okay.
Coming up this Saturday, it's Wine Festival, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Florida Estates Winery. Enjoy live music, food, homemade crafts, and unique gift items, and more. And, of course, world-class wines from Florida Estates Winery. This event is free and open to the public. Enjoy the great outdoor setting at the winery this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Wine Festival, located at 25241 State Route 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. For more information, call 813-996-2113 or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. It's always a great day at Florida Estates Winery.
Thank you. I'm back.
All right.
We're getting to be professional here. You know that, Mike? That sounds good.
And I didn't have to outsource that. That was
that's right. That's great. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Excuse us, everyone, while we pat ourselves on the back for a second. Slovenia. This is located, the country Slovenia is located on the far border over by Italy. It is right in Italy, at the northeastern edge of Italy. And Slovenia has about 59,000 acres of grape planted. It's under a wine law that Slovenian wine law that the best wines may be bottled in 75 milliliter bottles. These generally bear a seal called PSVVS. So if you pick up a Slovenian wine, look for the seal called PSVVS, which is the Business Association for the Viticulture and Wine Production. It's an organization that pretty much controls the wine industry in Slovenia and does quite a good job of it. They've increased the quality, they've increased the management of the vineyards, and they've increased the awareness of the Slovenian wines because of their because of this Business Association for Viticulture and Wine Production. There are three wine areas in Slovenia, one called the Latrell, one called the Primorska, and or the Latrell or the Primorska, and it has four divisions. And the other major region has six subdivisions, with another region having four subdivisions. So the areas that grow the grapes, most of them, the Latrell is located on the far western edge of Slovenia, right next to Italy, and then the other two are on the eastern edge. Slovenia is a little almost elongated with a neck up, and the neck area is the Drave Valley area, which is right next to Hungary, and the rest of it is on the eastern edge of the country. A nice climate, influenced a lot by the water. It's influenced an awful lot by the Adriatic Sea, where it comes up there, and it makes for some real nice wines. The two major regions, the Latrell region and the Drava Valley, makes about 85% of all the Slovenian wines. So most all of them will come from that area. Croatia was interesting. I was just absolutely fascinated with some of the stuff I was reading about Croatia. I did not expect a lot from Croatia, and then when I started to read about Croatia, I was just amazed about the background on it. There are more than 300 geographically defined wine regions in Croatia, with about 67% of it going white and the rest of it going red, with a little bit of it in rosé, about 1% rosé wines. The middle of the continent, and Croatia, again, to paint a picture, Croatia just south of Slovenia, on the Adriatic Sea. It has a little arm that goes down right next to Bosnia, not unlike the arm you are used to seeing in Chile, the long thing. This runs down. It is northern edge of it is along Hungary, and most of the wine area is in the north central part of the country, with a lot of vineyards planted along the lawn that goes down on the Adriatic Sea, with the islands containing a lot of vineyards too. A surprisingly large amount of vineyards are in the islands. The continental, the middle part of the country where the big wine area is, 90% of that area is planted in white wine grapes, which are, some of them are really very pleasant, although the coastal area and the islands is where the red wines are, and these are becoming very high quality, very good wine. There's some excellent wines coming out of this region. About 10% of this is classified as superior wines, with about 70% of them as good quality, and then only about 25% of they're classified as table wines. The grapes that are used most often is the Gravina grape, Grasselina. Most of the time you hear it's a Welsh Riesling, and this is used a lot in Croatia. There's another grape called the Plavac Mali, P-L-A-V-A-C, Plavac Mali, M-A-L-I. The Plavac Mali is a red grape growing in a lot of the islands and growing down the peninsula. It is a highly regarded grape. It is wines from Dalmatian Semillon grape are also used. It is Plavac Mali, though, is thought to be an offshoot grape. And Zinfandel is basically a California grape with some ancestry traced back to Spain. I believe I talked about it in an earlier program. But they're saying that the Zinfandel grape, most people in the wine world agree that the Zinfandel grape is a native of the Dalmatian grape variety, the Plavac Mali. Although Italy was really the first area to be considered as the origin of the Zinfandel, with the strain going over to Spain and California calling the Zinfandel. It's still out. They've done genetic testing on it, and they're thinking that the Plavac Mali is not so much a actual Zinfandel grape as a very close cousin to the or a child, if more so than a cousin, more of a child to the original Zinfandel. It's not being planted a whole lot, and it's being called different names over there, but it is giving some good results in the areas that they're planting it. Croatia has a variety of grapes planted. Gewurztraminer, Pinot Blanc, and Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc are growing a lot in the central areas. And then they have a whole list of wine or of grape wines that are of wine grapes that are impossible for me to pronounce. The local ones there that they use a lot for blending in for local grapes. Bosnia and Herzegovina. This is the area. There is located just. Actually, Croatia surrounds it, basically. Yugoslavia is to the east of Bosnia and Herzegovina, and Croatia surrounds it on all the other side. There is a very small, and I don't want to say that because I really can't read on this map. I'm going to say a very small sea area touching Bosnia and Herzegovina, but I don't think so. It looks at this, and I don't think it does. I think it's it is completely wet because of Croatia. But the Bosnia and Herzegovina has had problems with the wars that's been going on for years there, and the constant struggle that they have been going through has really caused problems with it. And because of that, they have the grape and wine industry has not been something that they have really spent a lot of time with. It's got the potential of being a nice growing area because of its location. It's got the potential of producing some nice wines, but it's not going to get any foreign money invested into it because of the unstableness of the region and the governments and everything. And until that settles down, we probably won't be hearing too much more about that area as far as wine goes. Serbia and Montenegro. Serbia and Montenegro. This is this area is located. Geez, I don't know. It's not on this map. Dead air. I need to talk and say something.
Yeah, I was looking. I saw it on one of the maps here, but it's kind of.
I can't find it. I don't know. Oh, there it is. There it is. It's just. It is. Just actually, just east of Bosnia Herzegovina, and around Yugoslavia and stuff like that. It's Serbia and Macedonia is both east of it. Macedonia is the right down just north of Greece, and Serbia is right around the, there. It is Serbia is right in that area too. So Serbia and Macedonia. Macedonia is just north of Greece and the areas. Most of these wines come from Russia. I mean, this is old Russian type wines here, made for the Russian style of drinking and all. See a little bit higher in alcohol because of that, and not a slap against the style or the Russian taste, but a lot of the things I've read said that the wines coming from this area tend to be a little bit higher alcohol than your standard ones. Modern practices are not really carried out much there in this area. Again, a lot of old vineyards, a lot of old wine equipment, a lot of old knowledge that hasn't been updated. They have some very nice possibilities, though. And this is again, because of their location, they have possibilities of doing some very nice grapes and very nice growing vineyards there. Excuse me, but it's just because, again, of the lack of equipment, lack of foreign investment, and, again, because of the problems with the unstableness of the government and of countries, there is not a lot of input of monies and from elsewhere. Most of the vineyards, they're having some success with Terminers and Merlots throughout the country, but nothing to brag about. They are using blends with Pinot Noir and Gamay to make a lighter, fruitier Gamay Pinot Noir blend and not a real rich blend. Most of the wines, white grapes, are medium sweet fruity wines, and most of them are grown around, 90% of them are grown around the area of the town of Smedrova, or Smedrovo. So Serbia is having problems still, but they have the capabilities and hopefully be able to pull out of it. Montenegro is small production, three regions that basically are where they are. The three regions are actually in the throughout the country on the rivers and stuff like that. There's no real defined. Most of the country does have great plantings, and so they really do a lot of the everyday grapes there. Macedonia is located just north of Greece. It is a Serbia, Montenegro. This is Macedonia. Macedonia is just north of Greece. They have quite a bit of acreage, 75,000 to 80,000 acres of vineyard planted, 28 million gallons of wine a year, but most of it's not shipped. Most of it's kept right in the country of Macedonia. The country is a potential, but because of, again, political instability in that region, it doesn't has not been able to realize this potential and foreign investment that it would like to have. So that has hurt it quite a bit. Bulgaria. Bulgaria is located just off the Black Sea. It's south of Romania, just off the Black Sea. It is a rather large country. They monopolized the wine industry in the 1990s, which increased production and increased a lot of people coming and doing wine. But unfortunately, it didn't help the quality or the variety. They're basically doing the same thing they've always done. A lot of money has been pumped into it. $30.5 million U.S. dollars was fed into the country in the late 1990s to help increase the wine industry and increase the wine business. And it worked well, except the fact that a lot of corruption still in the government, problems in the country, and it didn't really go to where it needed to go. The four regions, northern region, seven of the country's 28 regions are here, produces a red wine usually in this region. The eastern region is the majority of white grapes and white wines made. It is Chardonnays are nice and fruity, some nice oak coming out of the wines there. Southern region is looking at red wines and starting to put out some nice red wines. They're coming out with some very pleasant Cabernets and also some local grapes and blends of Cabernets and Merlots. The sub-Balkan region, which is the south region by the ocean, or by actually the Mediterranean Sea and the Black Sea, that area there is turning out some nice Cabernet Sauvignon Merlots, and probably some of the best Chardonnays come out of Bulgaria in this region now, too. Again, the influence of the ocean is helping that a lot. And the southwestern region is... it's in the south part of the country, the furthest south of the country, a little dip in it. And because of the heat and all that, the vineyards are planted at a much higher elevation, and they're getting some good results from, again, Chardonnay because of that. Romania. Romania is the next Chile, or the new Burgundy, as it's being called. During the 1990s, it had all sorts of great names attached to it, to how well it could do and how nice it could be on the wines and all that. Although with low-grade grapes and continuously low-grade grapes and not getting the full potential from the grapes, it really hasn't lived up to all the hype that it was hoping to have. Six regions on there, three regions export, but not a lot. It is... probably we're seeing a lot of local grapes, Sauvignon Blanc, though, is being harvested, and some late harvest wines are getting some late harvest wines. Bulgaria is just south of Romania. Romania is also on the Black Sea and in the just east of the Black Sea. Or, I'm sorry, west of the Black Sea. The Black Sea is east of Romania. The Moldova. Moldova is an ex-communist country that is surrounded by communist countries. It is located northeast of Romania and just south of the Ukraine. I had a wine from Moldova once, and it was really pretty decent and not outstanding, not fantastic, but it was really a pleasant wine. It was a Cabernet. And it had good Cabernet characteristics and good Cabernet quality. It wasn't one that you would say, oh, wow, this is great, I need to find some more. But it was something that something they could be proud of. They also do a lot of Merlots, Pinot Noirs, and then the whites are a lot more familiar with in the area. Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Gris, Riesling, Gewürztraminer. They do some of their own grapes, but it's been a lot for blending and for local sale. And I mentioned that is just next to the Ukraine, and the Ukraine's the next region. Most of the vineyards on the Ukraine are right down by the Black Sea. The Ukraine has the little finger that pokes down on the Black Sea, and that's where most of their vineyards are. Again, an old history there, not a lot of wine production. Modern times has shown modern improvements in the grapes, and it's showing a lot of potential. And that little finger down the bean on the Black Sea is getting a lot of influence. Because of that, that accounts for almost 95% of the vineyards in that area. And again, they're using a lot of European varieties, a Cabernet Sauvignon, Gewurztraminer, demeanor, but they're also doing a lot of fortified wines and using some grapes that, again, are almost impossible to pronounce. They're doing some blends that are very good. But to the cab I had from there, though, I was really impressed. The Ukrainian cab, and I was surprised to see one. I was surprised how well it was. So. And this was a few years ago, quite a few years ago. So if they're increasing their capabilities and all that, then it could be a pleasant surprise. And then last, I want to talk a little bit, just a couple minutes here, about Russia. There are five regions in Russia that grow grapes. Dagestan, Krasnodar, Stavropol, the Don Valley, and Chechnya and Gashita, where a few vineyards are in the last couple there. The warfare and stuff like that has pretty much wiped them out. The regions represent about 95% of all Russian production, and the rest of it's spread out through different areas of Russia. But most of this, again, is right on the Ukrainian border and down in the Black Sea area. Russia touches the Black Sea, and a lot of vineyards are in that area there. And this is where they have it. If you look at Russia, Russia's starting to get a little bit north for the areas that you can grow grapes. And when you start getting too far north, you start having problems with too short of a summer and not enough growing season. And the Russian region is starting to jump up. I mean, it's actually Russia's area is into Canada. We're looking into Canada here in the same latitude. So that is Eastern and Central Europe.
Wow. Okay. Very good. And I was just looking at the weather report for the Ukraine, and I'm not going to do a full forecast because I can't pronounce most of these towns anyway, but anyway, the one with all the continents in it and no vowels in it, it's like -2 degrees right now. There's a lot of snow in the country, and the high temperatures are running the temperature range is I've seen anything from -2 to 34-35 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's kind of cold up there too. So
it's cool. And it's a short growing season, though. I mean, it gets cold early and it stays cold late, and that's what affects the grapes there. It's a short season.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. I didn't realize there was all that was going on over there. That's very interesting to hear the information that you had on Eastern and Central Europe. That's very, very cool stuff there.
And if they get away from the conflicts and all that, we may see some great wines coming out of that part of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. Let's see. We don't have any comments on 1,000 Mics. 1,000 Mics, you all can send in your comments at any time during the show. Let's see. Blog Talk Radio, nobody's on hold. If you need to call in, it's 646-727-3235. However, the show is closing in less than a minute, so...
Yeah, we're getting close to the end.
Call number one, get on.
So we have the festival Saturday.
Yes.
Hopefully the rain's going to hold down a little bit. We've got a lot of vendors coming up. Great musician.
Yep.
If you all want to get in touch with me, you can get in touch with me on the email at corp@fluen.com. Or you can go onto our Facebook page. I have a Facebook page. For the winery, it is Florida State Winery on Facebook. I just throw out thoughts and different things that's happening there and stuff that's happening at the winery and all that. So I have fun with it, and people. So
they're not hearing that, but I think the 1,000 Mics people are okay. And that's 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. this Saturday. That is Wine Fest, and yeah, like you said, hopefully the rain's going to not be there during the festival. So.
Hold out just a little bit.
Yeah. Very good. And we will be back next Thursday. Next Thursday, you want to join us. And this will be on February. That's incredible.
February
4th.
Wow. They're there already.
have to go back and replay January and see what happened. Anyways, just check us out, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Blog Talk Radio or on 1000 Mics. We start right at 7 o'clock until 8 p.m., and it's just about 8 p.m. now. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Ron,
thank you.
For joining us. It's very, very interesting, and I appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week.
See you all next week.
Yeah, good. And okay, that one's done.
I think we just lost them.
We lost a half of them, yes. And
half of them. The other half is still here. 1000 Mics, thanks for hanging out.
Yes.